This is Leroy Downs with Sounds and Colors Radio. The Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz was specifically designed as a college-level program where the masters of the music could get together with the new wave in jazz and disseminate their experience, logic, and theories, as well as wisdom, onto the finest group of young rising stars eager to learn, open to ideas, and ready to move the music forward. The Thelonious Monk Institute has graduated many who have gone forth to saturate the world of jazz with their insatiable talents. This year's group of graduates have stayed together and formed the band called Holofoner. I spoke with them one day before graduation and the release of their brand new recording titled, you guessed it, Holofoner.
I'm Dave Robert.
My name is Diego Urbano.
My name is Miro Sprigg.
My name is Eric Miller.
I'm Jonathan Pinson.
My name is Josh Johnson.
Very good.
Good.
These fine young gentlemen of jazz are just about to graduate from the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz with a master's in jazz studies. As they just finished their first project together, I asked them what are some of the feelings that they have about coming out with a brand new release and about to travel the world and do their music.
Anxiety.
Lots of anxiety.
Yeah. It's kind of a crazy time right now. Graduating tomorrow, and right after the graduation, heading to Blue Whale for our official CD release concert, which we're very excited about. The Blue Whale has kind of been our spot to play, so it's always great to play there. And it's also kind of the launch of our post-graduation CD release tour, so it's pretty exciting.
The Blue Well is a jazz club here in Los Angeles. It is the pinnacle place for all things beautiful, all things original, all things creative. And June Lee, the owner of the club, has really made this a special place for musicians to create.
Just the club having opened when it did in LA, I feel like, first of all, has done a lot for, it's done more than a lot for LA's jazz scene, which Jazz Bakery closing and just a lot of places changing and closing down. There hasn't been much room for movement with the jazz world in LA. So people coming from out of town, more progressive, moving jazz, there hasn't really been a home for it until Blue Whale opened.
Bassist Dave Robert.
So just having it open here in LA and right around, I actually moved here the same year that it opened, and then the rest of the group kind of trickled in a couple years later. But I think it kind of resonates perfectly with exactly what we're doing. We have a really good following whenever we play there, and it seems like what we're doing musically kind of speaks the same language that Blue Whale has been doing as a venue.
Saxophonist Josh Johnson.
It's been amazing. I mean, I've only been here for 2 years, but I can say that some of the most inspiring performances that I've been a part of and performances that I've been a part of as an audience member have been at Blue Whale. It's a really just incredible venue. And I think June has really figured out how to balance all of the those difficult elements to running a jazz club, which, you know, being able to support the musicians, and also be able to, to bring in creative music, but to support musicians. And he also does an amazing job of mixing. I'm always blown away by all the people that he brings in, but then also the people who are living and performing and studying here in LA, who he's also supporting, and kind of having that balance of local and, regional talent. Is amazing and special. There's not that many venues that have figured out how to support both and keep their doors open, to be honest.
Many of you might be actually wondering, what exactly is holophoner? Vibraphonist Diego Urbano explains.
Should I be totally honest? Like all of it?
All of it, man.
Yeah, no copyright issues, no. Okay, I'll go for it. Holophoner, it's, well, first of all, it's, we're seven people. It's so hard to pick up a band name. Like, we spent, like, months.
Months.
Especially here with my friend Dave. He's very picky. He has a very high sense of taste. So, it was hard to pick up a name. So, I just wrote this tune for the band. It's called My First Holophoner. And, well, the whole thing with the holophoner, it comes from a TV show, from a cartoon called Futurama. And it's this futuristic instrument that's sort of like an oboe that projects images in the air. And the quality of the images is connected with how well you play the instrument. So it's very hard to play. And it also means like, well, so we based the band name on that tune. This is like a catchy word. This is weird, I don't know. But it also means like holo means every, like all in Greek, and phono, it's sound. So it's all of the sounds. So it has a double meaning, I guess, because it's all of the sounds and it's, well, that's it basically. Yeah. It's kind of futuristic and we're trying to aim at the future. So yeah.
I would say, like, going back to the images, we're trying to project like certain images and emotion through our music for the audience to catch whatever those images or emotion are being displayed. So in terms of our instruments and in terms of the vibe and in terms of the energy that we're projecting, that's one of the goals that we're trying to have happen as artists as we are.
Yeah, you just thought, like, to add a little bit. I guess that's what you're saying. It's like when you have another layer, like in terms of senses, when you can see something with the music, that's what I consider like we've reached like a goal. It's not about the notes alone. It's like it has like another kind of depth, I would say. So yeah, we strive for that.
That's kind of, I mean, that's exactly what it is for us too. Like it's kind of a thing about unity too, when we're all kind of in it. And in it together, that's when the images are the clearest. So that's kind of part of what we're going for.
So I asked about the experience of the Thelonious Monk Institute and how the program and the master instructors have influenced some of the ways that the cats think about the music. Trombonist Eric Miller.
Well, one of the great things about this program we have been in is the opportunity to rehearse together for 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday. And during this time, one of the things that we've done a lot is practicing composing together. And this has been an exercise that has helped me to develop a greater sense of the concept that Herbie Hancock talks about, which is non-judgment in music and patience.
I have to live up to that, right? Thank you so much. And I extend my gratitude to all of you.
And the idea of everyone supporting each other and embracing every idea that we present is a way that we have been able to elevate the music and achieve at least somewhat this sense of unity that we're describing, and simultaneously try to go for what Wayne Shorter talks about in regards to singularity, where we're all our own chefs and we're all are the directors, actors, and producers of the movies of our own life while being together at the same time. So that's the goal.
Things that happened was, as Eric was saying, we've written some compositions together, and it wasn't necessarily an easy process. It took a while, and it sort of, at least to me, seemed for a while like, how is this going to work? It seemed like it was going to end up just sort of being a bunch of things thrown together. But then the sort of two finished compositions that we produced as a band, one of which is on our record, it's called Source of the Force, turned out to be some of our favorite music to play. And in a certain way, really capture something about the band that none of our other, you know, pieces that we play do. So that kind of showed something to me that I didn't really know before, which is the process of developing music as a band, you know, sort of workshopping it, composing together. It captures something about the entire group that you can't do any other way. It's a little bit similar to, like, it's the sort of slower version of how we are when we're improvising together. You know, it's like being jazz musicians, we're all used to playing, you know, improvising together. But composition is often seems to be more sort of a solitary thing. But to do it together is kind of cool. And it's actually not that new. If you think of most rock bands, a lot of it is co-writing. It's just some reason that hasn't come into the jazz world as much. So it's an interesting process.
Talk in Mexico, and I was just talking to him in terms of my experience in the 2 years, and I was like, I've learned so much being around him as well as everybody else in the Institute. We're all like, we all come from different places in the world. We all have different beliefs of what life should be about, you know, and we all like and dislike different things. And I would say, in terms of with me, it's like every person in the group has something that I could learn from, you know, in terms of whether it's their music, whether it's their personality. And the key is to continue to have an open mind to that. And that's how it's shaped me more as a person from the 2 years. Probably it would have taken a longer time for me to learn certain things in life without this program. than being with these guys in 2 years, because, you know, the fact that we are so different, there's this amount of knowledge that you're able to be able to receive if you are open to it.
I think John couldn't have said it better, because, I mean, in a usual case, the less likely you're going to have kind of like-minded individuals, but these are seven people who really, I mean, some of us couldn't be more different than the other people, but somehow musically and, you know, the way we communicate with each other, we're still so much on the same page. And one thing that we've really strived for on that note is, you know, it would seem kind of weird releasing a CD of an original composition of each of ours that sounded like seven original compositions by seven completely different composers with seven completely different things. Meanwhile, somehow we've been able to do that, and or at least hopefully it comes across this way, is that it still sounds like one band made up of seven individuals. But, you know, kind of, and this goes back to what Diego was saying about, you know, all sounds. You know, I kind of take the title or the band name, Holofoner, in that respect is, you know, seven sounds, but all to come together to create one image, rather than seven completely different images being projected at the same time. And so that's been really, it's a challenge for sure, but it's something that definitely came naturally, I think, for all of us, you know, just getting to know these six other people in the band. For me, you know, there are six musicians who I really hadn't played with at all before this. I knew Moreau a tiny bit before this program, but, you know, so getting to know everybody's strengths and weaknesses and really their vibe, and being able to create music from all seven of those things together to create one picture has been an amazing experience.
Usually when music students finally finish their studies and graduate, they're so eager to branch out and start their own individual careers, but Holofoner decided to branch out together.
For me, it was kind of like a given. Like when we started playing, I just knew that it was like quite possible. So I never actually thought of like one day when we decided about staying together. I guess it was like a natural thing. It just happened. Yeah. So, organically.
Yeah, exactly what Diego described. I mean, I think there was a point maybe, I mean, where, not where things changed, but where we took a second to reflect and we're like, hey, we got something here. Like, you know, this is like, oh wait, this is something really special, you know. You know, sometimes it's hard when you're in the midst of it, you know, to take a step back and kind of assess the situation. But when we did that, I think we all were like, whoa, you know, and, such a unique opportunity, you know, playing together so much, spending so much time together, living together, hanging out together. That's all part of the music. So I think that's a big part of it too. It's become a family, you know, in the music and outside of the music too. And I think given that, there wasn't really any other choice than to stay together and to record and, you know.
I mean, it's the best thing we can do, all of us right now, is to be together.
One of the benefits in being a part of the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz is that all of these great jazz masters come down and share their inspiration, their insight into the music with these musicians in a very private and intimate environment. I asked specifically, when thinking back, what are some of the most prominent memories that stick out in your head that really resonated with you as a musician that you'll keep with you throughout your musical career?
One thing in particular that really struck a chord with me is Stefan Harris, when he came in to teach us something that he practices, and he has like a big binder full of it, is emotional descriptions of every chord, combination of notes, and different melodic shapes. He'll describe in terms of the actual specific emotions that they project, and he actually is able to demonstrate this. And believe it or not, it's actually like we universally feel a lot of these chords and melodic shapes universally in the same way. And that really is something else to not only just learn your theory, learn your scales, become proficient on your instrument, but to actually have clear, conscious, emotional direction, and to know exactly how you want to affect your audience in each note that you write, in each note that you play. That is something that is a lifetime pursuit, and that's really inspiring to see. So that was one thing.
Yeah, that was also, the week with Stefan was definitely amazing. He's not that, he's just about 10 years older than all of us, but has accomplished so much based on just really clear goals that he set for himself. I think maybe the most amazing experience I can think of was actually the first time got to meet, well, I guess I'd met him before, but the first time getting to spend concentrated time with Wayne Shorter. And it was actually a rehearsal we had with him. It kind of happened all of a sudden. We had a scheduled like 2 days of class period with him. This is right when we started. And then kind of last minute, he contacted the Institute and said, hey, can the guys in the Institute, you know, play with me for this event? It was the LA Jazz Society. It was back in October of 2012. Yeah. So he was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award, and I think maybe originally Danilo Perez was supposed to play, but had to cancel. Or so anyway, we had this short little performance with him, and so we had a rehearsal, you know, right before that. And we're playing a piece of his called Prometheus Unbound, and also Orbits. And just the experience of playing with him that first time, I'll never forget. I just kind of felt like he pushed the entire band to like a place that it had never gone, and that I had never really felt before energetically, which is kind of amazing when you realize he's 80 years old. But the kind of life force that he has is pretty phenomenal.
Jazz means I dare you to create. If it doesn't sound like jazz, it doesn't mean it's not creative.
Just getting to play his music and see his, you know, handwritten notation, which is perfect and beautiful. He writes all his parts by hand and in pen, you know, using whiteout and very old school and just beautiful. So that's maybe the most memorable.
So how does Wayne Shorter move the spirit of a band?
Just through energy, just through this, like the strength of his sound and energy, and also the kind of, he's a very free mind. Like, I think he doesn't have any conception of any boundary between anything. That's my perception of it. And I have some experience of that myself. I actually happen to be in the same Buddhist practice that Wayne Shorter practices in Herbie. So I know sort of spiritually where he's coming from, but it's something he's been doing for a long time. And it's also, I think, just kind of a natural tendency of his personality. Like, if you read his biography, it talks about, you know, just kind of the somewhat abstract and somewhat weird, you know, him and his brother when they were kids or whatever, but he has a certain kind of abstract mind naturally, and then with the sort of spiritual aspect added to that, it's just, it's kind of hard to describe, but he kind of sees everything as connected, and that's the way he thinks about music. a lot of times when he comes in to, you know, work with us, he's talking about movies or books or actors or the way people talk, you know. It's very much in that kind of way, which is good. You know, it's good to not think of music just as music. You really think of it as a whole life thing. Yeah. Go ahead.
I think in a way that's kind of connected to the name Holophoner. Like, the more time, as we spent more time with Wayne and, you know, watched these movies with him or heard him talk about books and things like that, then when I go back and listen to his records or see him perform, I'm like thinking of images and I'm like hearing all that. And I think that that's something that, you know, whether we realize it or not, has kind of been part of or become a part of the music that we try and make, or, you know, or the, you know, when we perform, that's kind of, so I think it's all kind of connected to, I don't know if we ever really talked about it, that's being connected in that way, but just as I'm hearing Mara talk about it now, it makes me think that, you know, there's a connection there.
So, well, for me, one of the most important moments or learnings in the Institute was, like, it's not like a specific thing, but it's like an overall impression that I got from, I'd say, all of the artists that came teach us, is that, well, you know, what that's funny about the Institute. You say, you know, it's an institution that's aimed at preserving jazz. So you'd think it has like an agenda in terms of what kind of jazz it should support the most. But you know what? It's been like quite wide in terms of styles or sources or whatever. But everyone, and that's kind of like a conflict, because you have person A 1 week tell you should do this, and then person B next week says totally the opposite. So what do you do? So, well, but in the end, when you ask any one of them how do you make everything make sense, all of them would say, like, you know, you just have to have conviction, you have to believe in what you do. So how do you buy your own stuff? It's basically by getting to know yourself. You can fake something for someone else, but not for yourself. So that has been like the most important learning for me, just like getting to know myself so I can communicate to the others, basically, and to be myself for real. Yeah.
I think for me, I mean, I'm a bass player, so I have to talk about Ron Carter. He was the very Mr. Carter. Excuse me. Well, I mean, but that kind of goes along with what I'm going to talk about. He was the very first person we had in the Institute. In fact, we had already traveled together and hadn't even played together. And then we came back from D.C. and started with Ron Carter the next day. And it was just like his presence in this room from the moment he walks in is just, it's unbelievable. I mean, it teaches you a lot about respect and just having respect for these people who really have mastered the music. But every word that comes out of his mouth has been absolutely well thought. I mean, there's no, excuse my language, there is no bullshit in anything that he does or says.
What jazz has offered me are the following things. A chance to be able to see if I can play what I hear in my ear on my instrument. A chance to meet some very, very great players. A chance to make some really long-lasting friendships. A chance maybe to affect the musical outlook of people who I will never meet.
And in my private lesson with Ron, I remember the very first thing that happened was he said, play me an F major scale. And I got to the second note of the scale before he's just like, wait. We're just trying to fill this room with sound, not the whole neighborhood. And it was kind of, you know, I mean, I've always been taught to play with, you know, as big a sound as possible, which I still definitely believe in. But it taught me something about focus and just, you know, absolute everything he does is with the most amount of focus. And he had us playing so focused and so quiet, yes, but so just focused and really focusing on the minute details of our sound in that very first week that we had even ever played together. And it really set the tone for the next 2 years for me. And I have to mention just one other thing really quickly was when Herbie was here, it was one of the first times he came, he brought in the original parts from Speak Like a Child, which is a record that all of us share in common as being like one of our favorite jazz records of all time, I think Josh was transposing an alto flute part on alto saxophone, which is not the same. But playing these charts with Herbie just kind of shredding over it was like, it just didn't want to stop. I mean, we just wanted to keep going. That was unbelievable. It was like a, I don't know, I felt an out-of-body experience.
Saxophonist Josh Johnson.
On the heels of Dave there, one of the many memorable things for me involves Herbie. And it just happened maybe a month or two ago. He came in to work with us, and I don't know who brought it up, but someone raised the idea of like, hey, Herbie, you know, would you like to play with us on, you know, one of our original things? So we played a song of mine, a song that we play, you know, we perform pretty often, and it's kind of been part of our book, and it's one we enjoy playing. But I have never heard my song played that way before. And I mean that in the best way possible, too. It was like after we finished, it was kind of like I felt like I should have like given it to him or something, you know, like because it felt, yeah, really, like, you know, like I guess this is your song now. But it really, I don't know, it was kind of eye opening. It was like, not that we have a lot of freedom with this song and with all the music that we play when we in performance, we try to, you know, let it go where it needs to go, but it went to a place that it's never been before, and it was just incredible. I mean, if there was a camera in the room, you would have seen everyone with like jaws down to the floor. We were all just that's true, and that's a good point. Yeah. We have a little window in our room here, and people were just like, it's like a magnet, you know, people were like drawn to this sound of what was happening. So that for me was incredible. Just so, so memorable.
Man, it must be a fantastic opportunity to have Herbie Hancock record the tune that you wrote. You must have a recording, right?
No.
Did you record Herbie playing your tune?
Of course not.
No such thing.
Drummer Jonathan Pinson.
Let's see. There's so many moments in terms. It's hard to pick which one. And they kind of covered a lot of my favorites as well. I guess I'm trying to debate to talk about either Terry Lynn or Lewis Nash. And I'm probably just mixed.
Our choice.
Yeah. And I'm just basically going to fuse the two together. Starting probably with Terry. I've known Terry in my undergrad at Berkeley. And I looked up to Terry. At that point on, we worked together. So she came to teach at the Monk Institute at one point. And in terms of just like being able to bond with her as like a continued student with her was great. And it was just always great to see how she was able to put, actually this goes for Lewis Nash too, to have us be like spiritually and mentally in the moment of the music. They were both good teachers in terms of talking about that and going with Lewis. He sat us down, I think the first class we had with him, and he emphasized the aspect of like, you know, the goal is to be at the moment with the music and not think about like having your phone on and talking about this person or that person or thinking of something outside of that. It's to truly try and be in the moment with the people that you're playing with. And it was just actually just great just witnessing him literally doing it. like practicing that. So I guess with those two, it was to really just have them as examples and to strive for that. Lewis has been one of an influence of mine when I was in high school, and Terry has been an influence as well as a great mentor and friend throughout my high school and college experience as well. So I would say, in including to all the other stuff that's been said, those two have been a great experience for me.
We all have these natural abilities, and at the same time, we're all products of our environment. So without the collective of Holofoner and spending time with all these beautiful cats, would you be a different musician? Would you sound different? Or has the group collective become a part of your musical being?
On one hand, I know for a fact that my music and my life is going to be very much shaped by the things that I've learned here and everyone who has come and shared their music and their wisdom and their energy, like Miro was saying. Also, the idea of being an individual is, you know, something that it is evolving, but it's also a part of just who you are naturally, like outside of any influence. And so I think the best way to answer that question is to say both. I don't know if that makes any sense, though.
Okay. Well, I would say for me, it's different. It's like when you're talking with your grandmother, you just don't swear, you know? When you're talking with your friends, you swear, of course. Or different topics, you know, you talk different topics. So I guess for me it is, and especially like lately, I just had a class with Vinny Golia, you know, great free jazz guru. And he just told me it's like so clarifying for me. He's always had that issue when you write for a septet, it's not the same thing for a quartet, for a duo or whatever. So in the end, and this is like my way of seeing it, it's like you're writing for the people, not for the instruments. So when I'm writing for this band, I'm writing for Josh, for Dave, for John, for Eric, for Miro, for Mike, so and for myself. So it's a different thing. And it's like personalities. You have different approaches to different people. So for me, it's different.
Now that Holofoner has completed its first recording, I asked what were some of the similarities between recording in the studio and some of their live performances.
Well, the record that we made is the first time we've actually gone into the studio. And it was kind of a long time coming. We went out of our way to wait till towards the end of the program to do this, just because it's a constantly evolving process. So we do play live all the time. I mean, we travel a lot, we play in LA a lot, we're, you know, performing during our rehearsals all the time, and the music changes constantly. And one of the hardest things that I've always found to do with any group that I'm working with regularly is to take that same energy into the studio. And one thing that really helped us do that, we had Alex Chaloff. He's the one who recorded the session, and he in a lot of ways is like an eighth member of this group. I keep saying that because not only is he our age, but he is so very much like-minded, and he kind of knew. We let him make some of the decisions in terms of like where we were going to record, how we were going to record, because the eighth member. Is that the next CD?
Third album.
Yeah. dedicated album. Yeah, Alex is a really incredible person and unbelievably talented engineer. But he really had an idea from the beginning of how we should do this. And he had recorded us before, done a live gig of ours last June at the Blue Whale. And you know, he thought that because we're so well rehearsed and because we play together all the time, and part of what's so special about this group is that natural energy, taking that to the studio and then isolating us would be totally counterproductive in a way, because we're used to hearing ourselves a certain way, we're used to playing a certain way. It's not that we can't do it isolated, but it would just come out so much different than what we're used to and what we're really striving for. So we recorded at Ocean Studios in Burbank, where they have an enormous live room. And we were all in the same room. I mean, we still had to use headphones. Like, you know, we were baffled up to a certain extent, but just being in this large room all together is so much more close to what we do on a regular basis. And so we did tailor the arrangements to, you know, work better for the CD. But in terms of the solos and the stretching and the constant new flow of ideas, I mean, like, you could listen to some of the takes that didn't make it on the record, and it's like, of the same tune in four different takes, and they all sound totally different, you know, or the solos go different places, or whatever. And that's really what we were striving for from the beginning. So it's hard to do, but to take that energy from the live performance into the studio and still make a record that doesn't sound like a live recording.
Okay, so you've traveled the world, met all of the cats, played with the pinnacle masters in music and jazz, created a collective sound, recorded, and will tour your project, starting off with a CD release party. I mean, I have to ask, what's next?
Retirement.
World domination.
Retirement to Florida.
Retirement. We're actually quitting music.
Yeah. Well, on the heels of this recording, we're planning to kind of keep touring and keep the band alive. Our plan right now is to every few months be touring a different part of the country. And next summer we're hoping to get into the festival circuit and maybe even start working on our second album. One of the cool things, as we've, you know, been rehearsing 3 hours a day for 2 academic years, we got a lot of music that we've played a few times, that we've worked on, that we don't perform, just because of there's 7 individuals and everybody's writing for the group. So there's like, I mean, I can't tell you. It's kind of a struggle sometimes when we pull out a song we haven't played in a while. Not because it's difficult, but because just like to find the music in the you know, in a stack of papers. But all that to say that you know, we already have enough material to probably record a few more albums. But yeah, so that's on the horizon after doing some more touring in support of this record.
And just along those lines, or what you were talking about, just what we've done up to this point, we don't want to really forget about any of that and just be this new group. Like, what, you know, everybody is talking about how much the last 2 years and being a part of the Thelonious Monk Institute has really helped shape us, and the relationships that we've made through this, we don't want to forget about any of that. We don't want to not, you know, continue any of that, like, especially with, you know, those people we've gotten to spend, or been so fortunate to spend so much time with, Herbie and Wayne and Billy Childs and these really incredible musicians and people. It would be such a shame to just leave this program and just be like, all right, see you later. You know, maybe bump into you some other time. Like, I mean, I know they're hard people to keep in touch with, but we really hope that those relationships are lifelong relationships and not just, you know, okay, we're done with the program, done.
You
know?
As you move forth in this jazz business and this business of jazz, what is your strategy for solidifying the future of this music?
I would say, in terms of that, is like, we all individually and as a group together continue to put in the work to practice the history of the music. In terms of the people that came before us, we pay a lot of respect to. As for like the people, we all, I could say, have the same type of mindset of, we do want to please people. We do want this music to reach out to the people in a certain way. Another standpoint is, it's just like being a human being. You know, you can only be yourself, you know? So when it comes to that aspect, whatever comes out between the 7 of us, that's what it is. And we can't necessarily change ourselves for that matter, because this is what comes out of that.
There's a certain amount of trust that you have to have, and it can be a little bit scary and sort of starting out as trying to make, you know, a product as a band or whatever. Obviously, there's a lot that goes into that, and there's the skills of marketing and all those things, which I'm not an expert in. But the hope, I think, is, and I've seen this, like, in a lot of the artists in residence that come here, is that if we, you know, as a group and individually, you know, really develop our own voice and our voice as a band to the point where it really speaks and creates that picture, and we're really doing it from joy and from, you know, real authentic feeling, then it can reach anyone. And that's the experience that I've had, I mean, generally in my performing life, is that I, you know a lot of people that don't listen to jazz or don't like jazz because it's too abstract or complicated or whatever, you know. Or maybe, yes, certain people that are more into older styles. Or and I've been to a lot of concerts in New York where I felt like this is just complexity for complexity's sake. It's like when I first moved to New York, I went to Manhattan School of Music there. At first, I was like, oh, my God, this is all so amazing. And then after a while, I started to feel like, wait a minute. This is like musicians playing for musicians, playing music that only musicians can understand, you know. So there is a danger of that. I think one of the good things about this program is sort of the emphasis that most of the artists in residence have had, which is like music is not about music. Music is about life, right? So it's not – you don't want to get in this music school mindset. Like, this has been school, but I feel like it's a very different experience than my previous music school experience. Yeah. Felt much more connected to life in general. Even though, you know, we worked on various technical things and intervals and all this stuff, you know, but there was a much bigger feeling about it. And also some of the trips that we've done and the educational experiences all kind of put a bigger perspective on it. So hopefully that will help the communication aspect.
Yeah, going back to the thing I was talking about, conviction, basically. You can't please everyone. And I have like a strong, I always try to defend a lot of my artistic integrity, meaning that I'm going to do something and I'm going to stick to it. And for me, there's no such thing as a visionary. It's just someone who's stuck to their thoughts, to their ideas for a long time until people caught on to that. So that's my view. And that's what we have to do. So that's what I learned, basically.
That's
100%.
Of course.
That's, yeah. I mean, of all the lessons, I think everybody would be in agreement with this. Like, I learned a lot about music, but I learned more about just like being a human being. And you know, that's the really unique thing about this program, is the access to all the non-musical, you know, all the spirit and that's behind and kind of a part of all this music that we love, and getting to kind of see that firsthand, you know, 5 feet in front of you, through conversation, through music, through it all, through the way people live their life, is like something that you can't put a value on. And so for us, I mean, how that translates to the music, I think it's like Diego was saying, it's conviction. It's like, my view is that if you are committed enough to whatever it is that you're trying to communicate, like, people feel that. People can feel, regardless of whether they have any knowledge of jazz or jazz history, I think people want to be deeply moved by music, whether that's, you know, that can manifest in a lot of different ways, but I think people want to feel something, especially as, like, information becomes more easily accessible. And I know so many very young musicians who will blow you away. You know, it's like, I feel like every day it's like, there's a 3-year-old who plays like Coltrane. And it's like, you know.
3-year-old.
But at some point, you know, I think as the information becomes more accessible, we're going to have to return to the value of just authenticity and conviction, because that's what separates people. You know, it's not just, I know what scale to play. And you don't know that, so that makes me good, you know? It's like, it's, you know, what can you communicate? Or like, what, you know, what are you saying? And I think that's kind of been one of the messages of this program.
The message is the message.
The message is the message. Yeah.
Can I say something too, like, last thing? I'm going along with what Moreau was saying. I'm so glad that we're not jazz nerds or geeky. Just like music. That's it.
Oh, I'll say one more thing. I think, at least for me, I think for all of us, what we're not trying to do something new or something old, you know. We're trying to communicate in the present, and that's not a...
That's the present.
That is the present. The message is the message, the present is the present. But, you know, that's not a... I think there's an illusion in seeking things that are new rather than seeking things that are authentic and that are... coming from a deep place of emotion and conviction. So I think that's what we're trying to do more than be new or cutting edge.
I guess in response to that is this is another thing that actually resonated with me in the program was when Herbie came, he told us one thing that we used to put things on the board. And then one thing that resonated with us was like, it wouldn't be life or Buddhism if it didn't have obstacles. So in terms of that, like, you know, we know we all trust in just trying to be ourselves and try and just present that we want to present, but to also do it in a way where there's no fear in terms of that aspect, you know. It's better to just like try for something that you believe in than not do anything at all with it.
You've been listening to Sounds and Colors Radio. My name is Leroy Downs, and yes, we got a chance to hear from these beautiful cats of jazz, the band called Holofoner, featuring Josh Johnson on alto saxophone, Mike Catone on trumpet, Eric Miller on trombone, Diego Urbano on vibraphone, Miro Sprague on the piano, Dave Robert on bass, and Jonathan Pinson on the drums. Beautiful cats of music, look for them to come to your town. Also, check out holofonermusic.com. My name is Leroy Downs, the Jazz Cat on Sounds and Colors Radio.